Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, February 10th, 2025. From the front page, we have Milliken Grad Takes Helm of Illinois State Archives by Michael Molson. Springfield. As Catherine Popovich sifted through the class catalog as a graduate student at the University of Illinois in 2010, one course in particular caught her eye: Administration and Use of Archival Materials. Now, more than a decade later, that initial interest has come full circle. Popovich, a Bloomington native, was named the sixth director of the Illinois State Archives in January. The depository, located just feet away from the Illinois State Capitol, has been the official home of the state's historical records for more than a century. It includes everything from a copy of Illinois' first state constitution, enacted in 1818, to a copy of an Illinois House resolution honoring the 2016 World Series champions, Chicago Cubs. Conservatively, it's estimated that more than 200 million records are stored inside the archives. As director, it is now Popovich's responsibility to maintain the building and its contents, keep an eye on potential legislation that could affect the archives, oversee regional facilities, hold seats on important historical and state record commissions, and much more. Popovich has worked in archives for much of her professional life, but she first grew her passion for history in the classroom of her social studies teacher, Tracy Freeman, at Normal West High School. I know one class we either had to watch a movie or read a book, and then do some projects based around that, Popovich said. And I decided I was going to be really aggressive and do the book, and it was the Rape of Nanking, and it was just so moving and really kind of inspired me to just learn more and more about our past. Freeman told Lee Enterprises that Popovich was often very quiet in class, but always the student would maintain eye contact, be very engaged, listening, and note-taking, adding that she was an extremely solid writer and that her work was researched extremely well. In the years after Popovich left, an archive club was started at the high school. And I almost wonder what would have happened if she were going through right now, Freeman said, because it could have happened even faster. But who knows? I mean, I think it's amazing what she's accomplished. Popovich went on to study history at Milliken University before earning her master's in library and information science at the University of Illinois, where she discovered her love for archival work. While student teaching, Popovich said she realized that path was not for her, but she enjoyed helping the students find the historical documents they needed. That's what really brought me to archives. I knew I didn't want to be a true historian, Popovich said. I didn't want to write history and do things like that, but I wanted to help people do their research, help people find out about the information that they need. While pursuing her master's, she also interned in the Special Collections Department at Illinois State University's Milner Library in Normal, and at the Champaign County Archives at the Urbana Free Library. Popovich then joined the Illinois State Archives as an intern in 2014. A decade later, she has worked in every section of the institution before taking the helm as director. David Jones, who recently retired after two decades leading the archives, said Popovich absolutely did the grunt work as an intern. And even as she moved up the chain and ultimately became his successor, she's still willing to do the grunt work. According to Freeman, her high school teacher, this is reflective of the students she taught all those years ago. What I most admired about Kathy is that she was a student who would socially work with any student in the class, partner up, even those of lesser ability than herself, and was never condescending or unkind to a soul, Freeman said. Jones recalled the innovative ways Popovich would deal with some of the more laborious tasks at the archives. For example, Popovich in 2018 was put in charge of the reference section, which included 75,000 cubic feet of materials stored across 12 levels of shelves. Archivists call them stacks. The stacks had not been cleaned or reorganized in 80 years, Jones said. To combat the issue, Popovich came up with Stacks Cleanup Day, an annual event held each October during American Archives Month. Staff dress in clothes they don't mind soiling and spend the entire day cleaning and reorganizing the stacks. To keep morale high, the staff would receive pizza for lunch and a t-shirt for their hard work. At the end of the first year, everybody is exhausted, and we're all just sitting there in the reference room at the end of the day, pooped. I'm like, well, I don't know what those people are going to say, Jones said. And finally, somebody sat there and said, that was a blast. Can we do that next week? And it's like, again, she made it enjoyable. Popovich has worked in every section of the archives, but she especially enjoys the referencing and processing areas. I love digging into a collection and kind of getting lost, Popovich said. Through that probing, Popovich has grown closer to some records than others. One in particular is a copy of former Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson's 1949 veto of Senate Bill 93, known as An Act to Provide Protection to Insectivorous Birds by Restraining Cats, or, more informally, the Cat Bill. The legislation would have required felines to be on leashes when out in public. Stevenson, a Bloomington native, argued in his message that the bill was against the nature of the cat. The problem of cat versus bird is as old as time. If we attempt to resolve it by legislation, who knows but what we may be called upon to take sides as well in the age-old problems of dog versus cat, bird versus bird, even bird versus worm, Stevenson wrote. In my opinion, the state of Illinois and its local governing bodies already have enough to do without trying to control feline delinquency. Stevenson's veto was not overridden, and the bill never became law. That's just funny, Popovich said. As she steps into her new role, Popovich has several goals for the archives. She aims to expand public access to historical records by digitizing more documents, upgrading the micrographics department responsible for digitization, and modernizing the Illinois Regional Archive Depositories, which archive local government records at 7 state university campuses. Secretary of State Alexei Janulius, whose office oversees the archives, praised Popovich's leadership and shared his excitement for her new role as Director of Archives. A native of central Illinois, Kathy is a shining star who is diligent, thoughtful, and well-respected not only in Illinois but on a national level, Janulius said. Having started as an intern and worked her way up the ranks, Kathy has achieved an incredible amount in a short time, and we're excited for her to begin her new role running the department. She shares our commitment to modernizing the office and making learning materials and vital documents more accessible and preserving them for future generations. Popovich echoed Giannulius's idea and said she wants to ensure there remains freedom to access public information. These are public records. They don't belong to us, Popovich said. We are their caretakers, but they are not ours. So we want to find as many ways as possible to connect the people to their records. Also in the news section, Snow Headed to Central Illinois This Week by Allison Petty. A winter storm is headed to central Illinois this week, bringing the chance for more than 4 inches of snow in some parts of the region. Snowfall is expected on Wednesday through the evening, and likely will be heaviest in the afternoon, according to the National Weather Service at Lincoln. Projections for the Decatur and Macon County area as of Monday morning put the range of accumulation anywhere from 1 to 4 inches. Adding to chill could be a northeast wind around 15 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 22 miles an hour. The heaviest snow on Wednesday is expected near and west of East Interstate 55. Bloomington could see 3 to 5 inches, the Weather Service said, while Peoria could expect as much as 7 inches. Other parts of the region, such as Mattoon-Charleston to the southeast, could receive less than an inch of snow. However, the Weather Service predicted mixed precipitation, including freezing rain, south of a Shelbyville to Danville line. The Weather Service warned that travel could be slippery and advised keeping an eye on the forecast. Light snow is also expected in southeast Illinois on Tuesday as a weak system passes through, the Weather Service said. Another chance for wintry precipitation could come next weekend. Continuing with local news, community rallies behind young Mattoon boy following death of grandmother and arrest of father, by Rob Stroud. Mattoon. There is a young Mattoon boy who is facing the recent death of his grandmother, who had provided him with love, support, and a home. The tragedy has been compounded by how his grandmother died. Mattoon police say she was killed early Friday by her adult son, the young boy's father. Family, friends, and other community members have since rallied around this child. They have sought birthday gifts for the boy, who turned 7 on Monday, and supplies for his new home with his grandfather in Shelby County, plus monetary donations for future needs. One of the boy's cousins, Mac Ard, said her expectations were surpassed by the number of toys, shirts, and other items that were donated Sunday at a drop-off site at Sapphire Salon and Spa in Mattoon, where she works as a cosmetologist. "He is a very loved little boy, and you can tell that already," Ard said. She added that, "I know our community is great, but it takes times like these for you to realize it." The call for help from the community went out in hours after the Mattoon police officers were dispatched at 9:04 a.m. Friday to a residence in the 2900 block of Oak Avenue for an unresponsive individual. The arriving officers found a deceased female, Lori Ames, 60, with blunt force trauma to the head. Mattoon police have identified her son, Douglas Reed, 31, as a suspect, and then found him at 10:46 a.m. in Moultrie County. During a police interview, police say he admitted to striking his mother with a hammer. Police arrested him on a preliminary charge of first-degree murder and took him to the Coles County Jail. Since then, police have confirmed that Reed is the same man who was the subject of a missing person report filed by his family last summer. The family later located him in Dayton, Illinois, with police help. Ames said on social media then that her son was at risk because he had left without his medication, without which he might appear confused. "He is a kind man and father. His family misses him. Please help us find him," Ames pleaded in that June 2024 post. Ard said their close-knit family has needed to come together once again in these last few days to support Ames' grandson, Bradley Reed. This has included helping equip the Shelby County home of his grandfather, Rob Reed, to host a young boy and his pet cat. "We all just stepped in wherever we could, with whatever we could," Ard said of their family. Donations of gas and grocery gift cards, boys' size medium sweatpants, children's clothes hangers, and other supplies will continue to be accepted, from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, and 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Sapphire Salon, 118 South 17th Street, Mattoon. Birthday gifts and supplies have also been collected at the Ridge Photography by Annie Banton, 510 6th Street, on the west side of the Courthouse Square in Charleston. Banton said after hearing about the tragedy, she wanted to do her part to help. The photographer said that she shared the need to help him with her circle of friends on social media. She said these community members were there to support her family when her young son, Everett, faced a health crisis last year due to a genetic disorder. "I knew that if I put it out there that a child was in need, they would come through," Banton said, noting that her studio was soon stocked with toys, gift cards, cat supplies, and other donated items on Sunday. Banton said she welcomes Charleston area residents who need help getting their donations to the child to reach out to her. Other community efforts have included Glory Deramaya of Charleston organizing a Support for the Reed Family page on GoFundMe.com on behalf of Bradley's aunt, Kristen Dolan. Deramaya wrote on that fundraising page that after the tragic loss of Ames, they want to ensure her grandson has all the support he needs as he transitions to living with his grandfather. "In this time of need, we are organizing a way for friends, family, and the community to offer support for Bradley's ongoing needs. Your kindness and generosity will greatly help them navigate these challenging times," Deramaya wrote. More local news. "Camera sees through arsonist denial," Decatur police say, by Tony Reed. Decatur. Police say it didn't take long for a Decatur arsonist claims that he had not torched the dumpster outside of his apartment building to be burned away under the unblinking gaze of a surveillance camera. A sworn affidavit described Decatur Police Department officers being called to the 3800 block of Camelot Circle on the morning of February 3rd, just after firefighters had put out the blaze. The affidavit said the apartment manager had reviewed security footage and saw the 23-year-old suspect drop an object into the dumpster and the fire erupting shortly afterwards. She then watched him walk back to his nearby apartment as the resulting blaze melted the plastic lid off the dumpster and blistered its paint. He told her a story about a different male pulling up in a green pickup truck to start the fire, said Officer Eric Havens, who signed the affidavit. Police later confronted the man, who was described as changing his story in the wake of video evidence. He stated he didn't mean to start a fire and didn't even know the piece of paper he put in the dumpster was on fire, Havens added. The man has since been charged with arson. He is free on pretrial release with the condition that he stays away from the apartment. Some state news. Illinois lawmakers try again to ban certain food additives. By Lily Carey. Springfield. For the second legislative session in a row, Senator Willie Preston, Democrat Chicago, is pushing to ban several chemicals from Illinois food items. But this time, Preston and his bipartisan backers have momentum from the federal government on their side. Senate Bill 93, dubbed the Food Safety Act, passed out of the Senate Public Health Committee last week. It would ban the use of four chemicals in Illinois foods: brominated vegetable oil, red dye number 3, potassium bromate, and propylparaben. All four of these substances have been the subject of scientific studies linking them to elevated health risks over time, and red dye number 3 has been linked to cancer in animals. Preston proposed an essentially identical bill last year, which passed the Senate with bipartisan support, but was not called for a House vote. However, this year's bill comes amid renewed attention on the issue of food additives. In the past 6 months, the Food and Drug Administration has moved to ban two of the four substances that Preston's bill proposes banning in Illinois: brominated vegetable oil and red dye number 3. The latter ban was enacted January 15th, just days after Preston reintroduced the Food Safety Act. He said in a news release he intended to amend his bill in line with the recent federal bans. Manufacturers already have to comply with California's standards, the EU standards, and now the FDA, said Senator Rachel Ventura, Democrat Joliet, at a Senate Public Health Committee hearing on February 4th. We're just asking them to make sure that our state, Illinois, also has those same foods. The two recent federal bans came at lightning speed for the FDA, Preston said. But the agency has a long history of missing deadlines. Melanie Benish from the research and advocacy organization Environmental Working Group noted during the hearing. The ban on red dye number 3 has been in the works since 1990, when the FDA linked the chemical to cancer in lab rats and to behavioral problems in children. Meanwhile, all four substances that the Food Safety Act proposes banning have been outlawed in Europe and Australia for decades. Given the FDA's history of regulatory delays, Preston and other members of the State Public Health Committee said Illinois needs to take food additive bans into its own hands. I want the FDA to be a leader on this issue, but I cannot allow them the time to be a leader on this issue at the expense of the people of Illinois, Preston said. California became the first state to ban red dye number 3 and brominated vegetable oils in 2023, and several other states are currently considering several bans on food and color additives, including New Jersey, New York, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. But some legislators believe the recent FDA bans could signal a change to the federal food regulatory process. Senator Andrew Chesney, Republican Freeport, was one of three to vote against the act in committee. He said food additive regulation should be left to the federal government, and he expects President Trump will handle things differently and move regulations more quickly. Senator Seth Lewis, Republican Bartlett, one of four Republicans to support the bill last session, is a chief co-sponsor on this year's attempt. Make no mistake, food and the security of our food and the quality of our food is a bipartisan issue, Lewis said at a news conference. We need to make sure that what our children are eating helps them grow to be accomplished individuals here in our society. That is not partisan. That is bipartisan. Community. Guests find their crowning moment at Decatur's Night to Shine by Danette Beckett. Decatur. Early in the evening, Night to Shine guest Jennifer McCary, 46, was ready to take a break. I worked up an appetite, she said, after dancing to energetic songs from artists like Michael Jackson and Elvis Presley. I deserve to eat. Filled with glitz, music, and high energy, Night to Shine is an international prom event held on February 7th for adults with special needs. The local event was held at GT Church, with all of the activities expected at many proms, including food, games, photo stations, karaoke, and, of course, music. At the end of the evening, each guest was crowned king or queen of the prom. Friday night's event was the third Night to Shine for McCary. Her buddy, Marsha Whitley, however, was a first-timer. The two met shortly after McCary arrived, ready to enjoy the evening in her pink gown with matching sequin tennis shoes. "We're friends forever now," Whitley said. "I'm so thankful Jennifer would be my buddy. She's shown me a great time." Guests from throughout central Illinois were invited to Night to Shine. Justina Monaghan and Mackenzie Romack are lead support people for two group homes in Mattoon. Not knowing what to expect, the leaders drove an hour to bring five of the residents to their first Night to Shine in Decatur. "They love it," Monaghan said. "I didn't know it was going to be so much fun," Romack said. According to the leaders, the guests were a bit apprehensive about dressing up for the event. "They are particular with their clothing. They like to wear the same things most days," Romack said. This took them out of their comfort zone, but they liked it. The event is sponsored through a grant from the Tim Tebow Foundation, as well as local sponsoring agencies Macon Resources, Inc., GT Church, and First Christian Church. The night started out like any other grand gala for Randy Sheets, department manager for MRI. "We walk in on the day of the event, and you know there's problems," she said, "but the guests never knew the chaos happened." The fun began for several guests hours before they arrived at the church. A salon was set up at MRI with hairstylists, nail technicians, and makeup artists, as well as a pizza party. "Then they arrive here as our guests," said Sheets. "It's all about them." According to Adam Hammerlink, admissions and discipleship pastor at First Christian Church, approximately 300 guests attended the night's prom. More than 400 volunteers helped make the event happen. "For even our volunteers, they look forward to this all year round," he said. "But we know the night's all about the guests." Volunteer responsibilities included buddies for each guest, as well as teams for check-in, activities, food, hospitality, medical, and security. "Our hope, our desire, would be that the heartbeat of Night to Shine is something that expands in our community," Hammerlink said. "In lots of other spaces, they feel excluded from things, but Night to Shine is all about them." However, several of the volunteers admitted they enjoyed the night almost as much as the guests. "We get just as much out of it as every other person here," said Aidan Young. "It's so rewarding." Young, along with Hallie Wilson and their GT Church group, leader Brielle Samuels, volunteered for the evening by taking photos of the guests as they entered the event. "Then we take pictures throughout the night in other places," Wilson said. "Their job took energy and creativity. They are very rambunctious, especially at the beginning," Samuels said. "The goal for the youth group as Christians is to show the guests the love of Jesus," Young said. "It is what the kingdom represents," he said. "This is what we stand for." This year's Night to Shine was the first for Wilson. "I like seeing their smiling faces, how included they feel," she said. "It is truly their night, and they walk with it." Amanda Mitchell, 28, had a special date take her to Night to Shine. Her dad, Scott Mitchell, escorted his daughter to the prom after her date decided not to attend. Amanda said she had a good time with her dad. "This is his first time at a prom," she said. "He never went to his high school prom." Scott admitted he couldn't have had a better date. "There was lots of dancing and screaming," he said, "but I had a great time." And a note from last night's Super Bowl, no three-peat, Eagles soar to prevent Chiefs from making Super Bowl history. The Chiefs were attempting to be the third team to win three championships in a row. But that did not happen. The other two teams, actually it's the same team, were the Green Bay Packers, who did it twice, from 1929 to 1931, and from 1965 through 67. This has been Mary reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, February 10th, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour. Please stay tuned.